The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent the views of Clear Channel Radio, nor should they be regarded as legal or investment advice. Seek qualified counsel before acting on any views expressed in this show.
This is Investor IQ with Glenn Wessel, where you hear straight talk about financial topics that impact you. Got a tax, financial, or investment question? As a CPA and holder of the Certified Financial Planner and Chartered Financial Analyst credentials, Glenn Wessel's the guy to ask. Now, here's Glenn.
And thank you so much for joining us this Saturday morning. My name is Glenn Wessel, host of Investor IQ. This Saturday morning, I thought we'd take a look at some of the things that are going on in the real estate world. And along those lines, I have a guest with me by the name of David Matney. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Glenn.
David is an attorney in Asheville. I think you've been an attorney for, what, 30 years or something like that?
Just over.
Okay. So David has been practicing within the realm of real estate and zoning and planning and land issues, I think that entire time.
Yes.
And all of it in Asheville?
Yes.
So we're going to be talking with you about some of the things that might vex people with respect to closing real estate deals and some of the complexities that kind of befuddle neophytes and maybe not so neophytes. So let's kick it off by laying down some of the things that people probably do understand. When you get to the closing table, you've made a deal to purchase a property or to sell a property. People will have a pretty good idea of what the seller does or who that party is, the buyer, the real estate agent, the lender. Where it becomes a little bit more confusing for people is what the title insurer does, what the closing agent does, the settlement process. So I'm going to ask you to kick off by just explaining what the settlement statement tries to accomplish, first of all.
Now, we have a new settlement statement from the settlement statements for residential transactions come out from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and they came out with a new one last year that could be used last year and now has to be used in most cases this year. The purpose of the settlement statement is to lay out the money side of the transaction. And I'm not going to tell you about the color of your house, anything like that, but mm-hmm. what you're paying, where your money's going, where it's coming from, whether the buyer's paying for it from their monies, whether the seller's paying for it out of the purchase price. And to the new one now also includes and gives you your loan terms. It is combined some portions of the good faith estimate.
So that's combined with it now. It's integrated more from what I've read.
Yes. We used to have a two-page closing statement unless you had a whole lot of extra little payoffs that you were paying on the third page, which you can still have. But you now have a completely new third page, which is some items out of a good faith estimate. Mm-hmm. And those same numbers that you had before, plus more, showing what your interest rate is, your payment terms, are now part of your settlement statement. And they never were before.
So now when someone goes shopping for a loan before they close, they get that good faith estimate. The new settlement statement that you see at closing or just prior to closing, that is more easily cross-referenced. Is that what I'm getting out of this? To the closing statement where you can see that the good faith actually translated into the actual deal? Or?
And the settlement statement is the first part of closing. It is part of closing. You actually have on the third page a column from the good faith estimate and then a column right beside it of what your settlement statement will show, what your HUD-1 shows. So you can look at and see, are you being charged the same things or is there something different from what was shown on the good faith estimate? Now, there are certain items on the good faith estimate that cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a change in the market, then you have to get a new good faith estimate.
Yes.
There has to be 3 days passed before you can close, and then you can close. There are others that can change within – there's a 10% tolerance total.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's others that can change totally. For example, if you can go pick out your homeowner's insurance, your fire insurance, your hazard insurance,
right.
and they estimate that it's going to be a certain price – but you want a bunch of extras on and yours is twice that much, that can change and that's not a problem. However, certain recording costs, certain items that they have disclosed to you, there's a 10% total tolerance.
Uh-huh.
One can go up 20% as long as another
Something
one goes
else
down.
Offsets a degree, right?
Yes.
Right. So when someone's looking through their settlement statement and they see entries for discount points and origination points or origination fees, it could be confusing to someone who's not schooled in the art of knowing what the nuances are of each one of those. Can you shine a light on each one of those categories?
Well, in the new one, they don't have a line called discount points.
Okay.
That line has kind of gone away. The concept is still there. And that's where we go back to the what's referred to as APR, or annual percentage rate.
Right.
And that is to give a prospective borrower, buyer, because it's not just buyers. It can be a refinance, can be a borrower. Mm-hmm. A single interest rate number that you can compare between loans. For example, if you're borrowing $100,000 and the bank tells you, all right, with no discount points, it's going to be and I'm making up these numbers, obviously.
Yeah.
5.75% interest. But if you want to pay a 1% discount, as you and I would term it over the years.
1% of the loan amount up front.
$1,000 up front will drop your interest rate from 5.75 to 5.5.
Okay.
Now, the reason that that's sometimes necessary, and this is something that we used to have, we kind of got away from, and I think we're now going back to, is the banks would look at your income, mm-hmm. would look at your expenses, as in other debt expenses you have, your housing cost expenses, and would not allow the total of those debt to be greater than a certain percentage mm-hmm. of your income.
Like 36%, let's say.
And it's changed yeah. over time
right.
as to what the
it's gotten higher.
It's gotten higher. Yes, it's gotten higher.
Well, thus the meltdown.
It had a lot to do with it. But if you did not qualify for the loan because the total debt was, if 36% was a cutoff, was 36.2%, mm-hmm. but you paid $1,000 more, which you happened to have in the bank, mm-hmm. and dropped your ratios down to 39.5, right. then you right. got your loan. Now, discount points are good if you're planning to stay in a house for a long time. If you're planning to sell quickly, if you stay in it for a long time, that $1,000 up front
will be amortized
over right. the entire term. Mm-hmm. It that's where the rate comes from.
Right.
If you pay it off halfway through, you've lost money.
So to a borrower who's looking to buy a new house or refinance, it would pay to go into that deal knowing or having some estimate of what you think your horizon will be in that home, and then to have an interest rate and or discount rate tandem that makes sense for your holding period. So, you know, the longer you're going to stay, the more inclined you're going to be to pay more discount points to pay that loan interest rate down.
And that also right. leads into the fixed rate versus variable rate. Mm-hmm. Because if I know I'm going to be gone from it shortly, then I may want a variable rate, which are almost invariably lower than fixed rates.
Mm-hmm.
But you're gambling for long term. If I know I'm going to be there a long time, you're better off taking the fixed and knowing you're there.
With respect to origination fees, though, unlike the discount points where you might have an incentive to pay more, with origination fees, I wouldn't think you would ever have an incentive to pay more, would you?
No. And that's – now they're basically – in this, they're combining them into one. And what you've got is basically one cost as an origination fee,
mm-hmm.
of which part is what we used to think of as an origination fee, and it's a fixed cost. You have mm-hmm. to pay it to get the loan, whether you like it or not. You don't mm-hmm. want the loan. I mean, if you want the loan, you have to pay it,
that's
and it's
right.
the same for everybody.
What if we've got just about a minute left before we've got to take a break, but what if somebody is choosing between a bank and a broker? Is there going to be a distinction as far as cost that they ought to pay attention to, or do you think it comes out similarly?
A broker may have a lot of different lenders, some of which are banks, some of which are mortgage companies that can send it to. Where a bank, you're looking at just their product. You compare. The product may be better at the one bank, and it's somebody local to talk to.
I've been talking with David Matney, who's a longtime attorney here in Asheville and all-around good guy. If you have any questions for him, you can give his office a call at 258-3395. My name's Glenn Wessel. This is Investor IQ. You're tuned in to WWNC, the Talk of the Mountains. We'll be back in just one moment.